by. We're about to begin. Good day, everyone, and welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange Conference Call. Today's call is being recorded. Now for introductions, I'd like to turn the call over to Ms. Christy Snyder. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Okay, thank you, Richard, and welcome to today's WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. My name is Christy Snyder, and I will be the moderator for this call. This call is being recorded, and within 24 to 48 hours, an MP3 file and presentation will be available on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site, where you can replay it at your convenience. If you have not yet joined the e-meeting, please do so now. An e-meeting URL is available to you from the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. If you are unable to access the e-meeting at this time, you may access the presentation from the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site, or by going to any IBM.com site and typing 700-7253 in the search box in the black section at the very top of the page. That's 700-7253. You may also instant message the co-moderator, Larry Denton, by clicking on ldenton@us.ibm.com in the e-meeting attendee list, and he will assist you. Today's presenter is Nitin Garr. Nitin is currently working as an advisory software engineer at IBM. He's part of IBM WebSphere OEM team, and his responsibilities include providing technical support to OEM clients and assisting them to integrate custom solutions with WebSphere Application Server. He plays a vital role in recommending best practices and advising OEM clients with implementing strategic solutions on WebSphere platform. Nitin has earned his MS in Management Information Systems and an MBA from University of Maryland. Today's topic is devising a PD methodology for an enterprise. It will include a PowerPoint presentation followed by a question and answer session. During the presentation, all lines will be muted. After the presentation, I'll ask attendees to answer a few quick questions via e-meeting polling. After that, the lines will open for a question and answer period. If you are in the e-meeting, you will see the presentation. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Nitin. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Christy. Hi. Thank you for joining this conference and this presentation. This presentation is about PD methodology, about tools and patterns, about devising an enterprise-wide methodology. The expected audience for this presentation are support professionals, system admins, IT architects, and anybody who is interested in the topic and like to see problems resolved faster. Let's move on to slide 2, Christy. And this chart essentially lists the objectives of the presentation. The presentation is really divided into two parts. The first part we'll talk about establishing a PD methodology. The second part we'll talk about arming with tools. In the first part, we'll define what methodology is, why it's important, and in other words, we'll break down the entire enterprise infrastructure into small management components. And the second part of the presentation, we will discuss a few tools. Now, please be advised that all the tools that I'll be discussing in this presentation are by far not the exhaustive list, but they'll give you an idea of what you know what I mean by test patterns at every layer. Let's move on to the next slide, Christy. And this is some copyright information. Let's move on to the next slide, slide number 4. So these are the few learning objectives which coincide with the objectives of this particular presentation. We will talk about importance of PD methodology. We'll talk about what a methodology is, what is e-business pattern as defined by IBM Global Services, importance of tools and test patterns, and eventually the value proposition for the enterprise IT environment. And oftentimes, myself included, as I'm in the business, but I'm sure many customers encounter situations where you are in a problem and it takes forever to really find the cause of the problem, leave it on the solution. So what we'll try to address, or what I'm hoping to accomplish in this hour, is to define a methodology in which it makes it a more structured approach to the art of problem domination. In other words, to have people accountable for what they're doing and also have defined test patterns which ought to be run at the time when the problem manifests itself. Let's move on to next slide, Christy, slide number 5. And this slide will define what the methodology is. And I've picked a definition at random from Interoperability Clearinghouse, which is basically a consortium of many organizations, which defines, and I read this verbatim, a documented approach for performing activities in a coherent, consistent, and accountable and repeatable manner. And we'll focus on these key terms like consistent, accountable, and repeatable manner, which will eventually focus on why a PD methodology is important, because every step or every problem is eventually documented, creating a learning organization. And we, as we all know, that you know, a foundation to any PD process is really a good methodology, because oftentimes it really takes longer time to find where the problem is before actually finding a solution. How does it all fit into a PD process? We'll discuss in slides to come. What I've also done in this presentation is I have extrapolated from the e-business pattern definition, which is well defined by IBM Global Services, and BCS, which is another division within IBM Global Services, is patterns, which helps improve developer productivity. And what I've done that is I've extrapolated those patterns into the PD aspect of an IT infrastructure. Let's move on to slide 6, Christy. And essentially, this slide talks about, you know, what the importance is. The enterprise environments today are expected to be highly available. There are external and internal services, you know, that expect your environment to be up 7x24 all year round. And to achieve this high availability is not an easy task, considering the complex and dynamic computing environment that the enterprise operates today. So adding the high availability aspects of it, including the componentized framework that we operate in today, has stressed the fact that the problem may occur in any of the components. And to be able to address those problems becomes increasingly important because of the fact that, you know, at the time of problems, it does cost organizations money in terms of resolving it, let alone the downtime that may be experienced due to a problem. This session attempts to advocate use of a problem determination methodology in detecting and isolating systemic problems, especially across enterprise-wide systems. As we move on from monolithic computing environments to a more distributed computing environments, and as you must have heard of buzzwords like SOA, service-oriented architecture, and SCA, service component architecture, the focus now is more towards distributed computing environments. So we've had these pieces of software which do great things for us, but we haven't really made strides in actually defining a PD process. And because the environment is so distributed these days, it's really complex and hard to really pinpoint where the problem is. So this presentation focuses on establishing that art and giving it a structure. Let's move on to slide 7, Christy. So this slide essentially talks about the steps involved in establishing a PD methodology. And this is essentially the part one of this entire presentation. So the few steps which I've outlined, and, you know, this can be gone into much detail, and I'll talk about every step as we get along in this presentation. But we basically start with chalking out an enterprise application server topology. And what this step involves is basically you break down the entire end-to-end components involved in actually handling a request into a more manageable and a one-picture diagram. The next step would involve in basically layering the components of this entire topology into more manageable functional and logical units. And we'll focus on why it's important to break them down into functional and logical units because of the fact that you want to associate accountability at every layer. And then I've introduced the term of test pattern in this section, which basically talks about standardized test patterns, which are oftentimes run to identify or isolate a problem to a specific layer. And the last step, which we all go through as a natural progression, is isolating and engaging domain experts. So each of these steps really, it's a complex process, especially as complex your IT infrastructure may be. But the benefits are immense. The benefits include, faster resolution time, and we'll see how it actually impacts your overall organizational objectives. Now, what this also does, the entire PD methodology, We'll also establish a common terminology and define roles for problem solving across the enterprise. In devising a PD methodology, focus should be documenting activities and relating to detecting and problems and troubleshooting techniques. Let's go on to slide 8, please. And this slide really addresses the step one that we talked about, which is enterprise application server topology. And this is, you know, just a simple example of a layered approach to an application pattern. And for those who are not familiar with application pattern, it's really a pattern that provides a conceptual layout that describes how an application component and data within a business pattern or integration pattern interact. And this is, again, extrapolated from the business patterns as defined by global services. This figure reflects a real-world enterprise, though it's very simplistic in nature. This can be complex, depending on how complex your environment is. If you're a much larger organization, then this is more complex. But you know what I'm trying to show here with this particular slide is that this is the first step in which you would actually have one picture view of your entire enterprise computing infrastructure. Let's move on to slide 9. Thanks. And the step 2, which is really the key to the PD process, is breaking down the topology into functional logical units. And our approach in devising a problem-solving platform is to categorize various components and tiers into logical functional layers. And the reason why you want to do that is you want to associate accountability with every layer. And these layers will represent various functional units of an enterprise environment, typically grouped logically to reflect the organization of tiers. Notable advantage of such a categorization would include establishment of common terminology and distinct role played by various functional units in problem solving across enterprise infrastructure. Now, if you notice in this diagram on slide 9, what we have done is we have broken down the simple one-view enterprise topology into what we call a logical manageable units, in which you would have an operating system layer, you would have a network transport layer, web service, web server and plugin layer, application server layer, database layer, and user registry authentication layer. And what we assume by this diagram is that one layer is built on top of another, assuming that it's dependent on the lower layers. In other words, any IT infrastructure would have an operating system, would have a network infrastructure, and anything above that essentially would be very specific to an organization. But again, this particular diagram will depend on what you have drawn out as a diagram for the first step, which is the topology. Let's move on to slide 10. And what we've done in this particular slide 10, is on step 2, at every one of those layers that we have talked about in the previous slide, we will actually have a phased approach. And this phased approach would, mean that you would actually have a problem description, you would have information collection, which really is a data collection process, including collecting all the log files and information of software, hardware environment, and logs and traces and so on and so forth. The third step would mean that you're trying to analyze the information that's been collected in step 2, meaning that you'll analyze the logs and so on and so forth, which can be done either by a subject matter expert or the level 1, level 2 of the organization itself. The next step would actually include SME and component expert. Now, the reason why I list this particular chart is because this phased approach, though it may seem a natural progression of events, ought to be documented at every layer that we talked about in slide 9. And this would actually add more structure to it. So in the event of problems, we can go through the existing knowledge base of the problems encountered in the past. Also, for the problem not encountered in the past, we can actually know what information to collect and the tools used to analyze that information. That way, you're reducing your time significantly before you actually engage the domain experts, like level 3 of IBM or even in-house specialists. So what this does eventually is, as opposed to involving SME to begin with, because SME essentially are people who are domain experts. In other words, they only look at one component, whereas the generalist level 1, level 2 support, you know, whether it's IBM or Intel organization, would look at the end-to-end infrastructure. So involving SME oftentimes can delay, you know, your PD process, simply because SME are geared or trained to look at one component only. And oftentimes knowledge of end-to-end really helps in this case. Once the problem area is narrowed, it can then be forwarded to SME, because then we have significantly cut short the time in identifying what the problem is. So let's move on to slide 11. And again, this slide 11 really, you know, it's something which every support professional does. It may look complicated, but it's really natural progression of events. There's also a need to define the sequence of steps when diagnosing a problem. And again, you know, this may seem like a lot of documentation, but it's a catch-22, because oftentimes when there is a problem, I have personally encountered many chaotic situations in which, you know, not everybody knows what's going on. But having a structure in place allows you to go through a series of structural processes to really isolate the problem and you know, find a solution to it. An effective definition of a sequence of steps requires analysis of problem, you know, determination activity, further differentiating it from activities not included in problem detection. And we'll talk about that when we differentiate between a problem versus a performance-related issue. So again, this diagram is simply to show what was discussed in the previous slide of the four phases that we talked about, in which you would actually define the problem, collect the appropriate information, analyze the information, and then analyze and engage at the level three or SMEs of a particular component. Let's move to slide 12, please. And this slide is really a step three, in which we define something called test patterns. And the term test pattern has actually been extrapolated, like I said earlier, from the concepts defined by global services and enhancing developer productivity, like application pattern, business pattern, and so on and so forth. And all test patterns really is really assigning the appropriate level of tests at every layer that you've defined. And this diagram, which is towards the end of slide 12, which, you know, with this approach, any complex system can be broken down into more manageable logical entities. And each logical entities would have its set of test patterns. And a test pattern may include definitions of various tests assigned to each layer to ensure proper functioning. To give a very simple example, is for instance, an operating system layer. If you were to have problems, you could have tests at the operating system layer to make sure that the system is performing at its best, VMstat, for instance, or IOSTat, as simple tools. And similarly, the upper layer layer could be the network and transport layer, where you can actually define stuff like ping and trace route. Those tools, and again, these are simplistic tools. We'll talk about a little more complex tools in slides to come. But the, you know, the objective here is to isolate one layer from the other. And these are more simplistic at the lower layers. And as you go above in the higher layers, the test patterns become more elaborate and more complex. And we'll talk about those, those tools in the second part of the presentation. And you know, test pattern can also include mapping of specific tools to each layer. So by doing this, what we have done, if you recall from step one, step two, and step three, is we are drilling down into every layer, defining test pattern every layer. Because in the event of a problem, as opposed to dealing with in a chaotic environment, you're running these tests, and people responsible at every layer are responsible for those tests. So there are situations where I've encountered myself where you go into a war room or a situation similar to a war room where the problem is not clearly defined, but there is a problem that exists. Now, having this approach will let the component owners or the layer owners to run their certain level of test and to say green or red. And if a problem were to be found in a certain layer, then the focus can go on that particular layer. So let's move on to the next slide, please. And again, the last step, which is very intuitive, is basically, you know, once you have isolated the problem, say, for instance, the problem lies in the plugin area of the entire enterprise topology, then you can actually engage domain expert to then further do a deep dive into problem analysis. The reason why I'm listing this as a step four, as opposed to getting domain experts in the beginning when the problem manifests itself, is because a lot of time goes into you know, domain expert trying to do all the work when they're not trained or not accustomed to looking at end-to-end infrastructure. Like I mentioned earlier, domain experts are trained in their field of expertise, and they're expected to provide solution or technical explanation for the cause or request for further data analysis. So if the problem lies in, say, one component, and it has been isolated with the test patterns that we've defined in step three, then we are further saying that, you know, it's a structured approach. We see this as an issue, so we think the problem lies in this particular component, thereby giving domain experts a lot of acquired knowledge through these series of steps, enabling a faster resolution of a problem. And again, this is just a diagrammatic explanation of the first information being collected, analyzed by the analyst, fixed by the development or level three, and hopefully the fix works, and then eventually you save money in terms of time and cost associated with the time spent on actually diagnosing the problem. Let's move on to slide 14, please. And this slide is really a complete picture. What this does is essentially your first step, again, you're having a big picture of the enterprise topology. Then you're breaking it down into a layered approach. And these layers, I must emphasize this, is logical and functional units. So you have every department, which is oftentimes siloed from the overall IT infrastructure, are responsible for their set of tests. And their, again, this is just a simple, you know, simple representation. This particular slide may change depending on how complex or how simple your environment is. For instance, security may encompass LDAP administration and all the other security components such as web seal and so on and so forth. Whereas in some environments, security may simply be a firewall, and you may have a content-level security isolated from network-level security. So again, it's really important to isolate this, break down the step one into logical and functional units of organization. And again, any subsequent changes in those functional units due to reorg or mergers need to be reflected in this particular living document, because it actually assigns accountability to the people who are actually managing those layers. And the last part is assigning test patterns. And again, step two and three go hand in hand, because once you assign test patterns, you're not only having a documented approach of running X amount of tests to make sure that the OS or the network or the web plugin layer is working fine, you're also inherently adding accountability to the people managing those layers, which is the entire goal of methodology as we discussed, as we define methodology in the beginning of this presentation, is to hold people accountable and actually have a coherent and a complete process to define. And in many cases, my personal experience, I think this takes time to do, and it's an enterprise-wide effort. But I think once this process is established, it does make significant impact on your overall PD approach and methodology that a company may employ. So let's move on to the next step. And again, besides the obvious merits or obvious benefits of devising a PD methodology for enterprise, what this whole process does is it adds structure to an art of problem detection. And again, you know, as we all know, PD is more of an art than a science, though it actually is both in many respects. But it gives structure, and that way, in a huge environment, when a problem manifests itself, it's not chaotic anymore, because people are aware of what they're supposed to do to eliminate the layers they own from the overall problem structure. It also enables clear separation of roles between IT, you know, various IT functional units. We all know that in many environments today, the IT units are siloed. OS don't talk to application folks unless there's a problem. So this does, has a clear separation of roles between the two. Reduction resolution time, it addresses skill gaps. In other words, even if you have new people in your organization, you have a living document which they can actually have access to. And in the event of a problem, they can run these tests, thereby reducing skill gaps. And they're not learning in a problem situation. Interaction with product support, IBM and non-IBM. In other words, this document that you would create, which would really be the Bible of all the PD processes, would include all the contact information and so on and so forth. So at the last minute, you're not struggling to find information as to who to contact with the problem, happens. And definitely the last part is the cost implications. Faster resolution means higher uptime, means satisfied customers, and it directly correlates to the bottom line. Let's go on to the next slide, please. Slide number 16. And again, what I've done is, this is the second part of my presentation. The first part, we talked about devising a PD methodology, and this approach really is a recommended best practice. You can tailor or tweak this depending on how complex or how simple your environment is. The second part of the presentation, which begins now, we'll talk about tools. And I find this important because, being in area where problems happen all the time, I think it's handy for anyone to have these tools in the toolbox, because this helps you run these simple commands and really, get a snapshot of, where the problem lies. So I've used a nominal numbering scheme, which I'll start with layer zero, the operating system layer, because at the end of the day, you have to have operating systems. So this layer essentially comprises of, basic infrastructure, hardware, software, operating system, and it could include distributed operating systems, flavors of Unix, AIX, Solaris, Linux, Red Hat, Microsoft Windows, and so on and so forth. This category can also include the I and Z offering from IBM. The management and admin responsibilities primarily lies with the system admins of this particular units. And some of the most commonly wide tools are discussed in the next slide. So let's move on to slide 17, please. Now, what I've done in this case, and you'll see this for all the layers that we have talked about, and if you notice that I've defined tools by layers, which were discussed in slides earlier. And these are some of the common tools which I've defined tools at every layer. And this is how you can, for presentation purposes, I've defined this format. If you were to devise a PD methodology and are serious about it, I think you should probably mention a little more details like use and command line and so on and so forth. So what I've done is I've attempted to cut down on jargons, which you may have not seen in jargons in my earlier presentation, and simply focus on the tools that are available today. Most of these tools are shipped with the operating system, and if not, then you can obtain them from the sites that I've listed. Most of them are really freeware. You don't have to pay anything. And there are a few tools, which I'll talk about later, which may have a nominal fee. But sometimes those nominal fee, whether it's for shareware or licensing fee, are nominal to really, find what the problem is. So a few of the tools that I'll discuss here are specific to the operating system. For instance, the first one listed here is GDB, which is a command line debugger. And you would typically use this to debug a process, and oftentimes you would have processes which get hung and or have problems with it, or for GDB, or which earlier used to be DBX and certain flavors of Unix, and GDB can also be used to actually analyze a specific debug mechanism for a particular process. PS, again, these are very simple commands, but again, we run this oftentimes to isolate the problem. And PS really will list all the processes. It will also list as to who the parent process is, what the process ID is, which enables you to further debug on that particular process. It will also tell you how much memory a particular process is using. So you have a lot of information by just running one command, and you can further isolate a problem, to one particular process and helps you drill down to that particular process. The next one is strace. Again, when you want the details of a system calls called by a particular process or program, you run this command, which will give you a detailed process trace. Oftentimes, support will tell you, we really need to find out what this particular process is doing. You would run this command to find out what system calls it's calling and what may be the problem with that. LSOF, one of my favorite tools. And if you notice that, we have many tools like Netstat, and if you do an SSAT minus AN, you get the state of the sockets, but you never get the PID associated with it. So oftentimes you have runaway sockets who are in closed rate or thin rate state. By running LSOF, you're able to get the process ID of a particular socket in a hung state, and you can further debug using the tools that we discussed above. So it's really a handy tool to really find out where the problem lies. LTrace, similar to strace, except that it lists all the functions and not just system calls by a particular program or by a particular process. TOP, which is next on the list, it's really a really comprehensive tool. when you run this command on AIX or Linux or any other flavor of Unix, and you have a Windows version of this as well, it'll actually list you all the system resources. For instance, how much of CPU is being used, what process is running, and how much memory is being used by a particular process, how much CPU is used by a particular process. So it gives you a snapshot in time of what a particular process is doing. PS3 will list you a process tree, which allows you to associate a child and parent relationship between processes. IOSTAT, which is really it gives you stats on file system or disk activity. Oftentimes, you can use IOSTAT and NETSTAT to really find out if the bottleneck lies with the local disk performance, in which you may have a disk I/O bottleneck versus a network bottleneck versus a virtual memory bottleneck. So this will help you eliminate that problem of not writing or retrieving information from the disk, it's somewhere else. NFSTAT, another statistics like IOSTAT, which gives you NFS client-server performance issues. And essentially this tool becomes instrumental when you're using NFS, especially now with high, with any of the high availability topologies, you may be using NFS to share the configuration information. So in the event of failover, if you see a slow performance, you may want to look into this to see if your NFS is performing all right. SAR, which is System Activity Report, another important tool which gives you information of all the system activity. And you can actually save and archive this to measure in time as to what your system is, or how your system is performing. Syslogd, another very important tool which can be run in your distributed environment to collect information at one single point, which gives you additional system information, right, kernel messages, and so on and so forth. One more tool to find if the problem lies in the operating system layer. Let's move on to slide 18, please. And moving on to the next layer, and again, we're still following the layer that we talked about earlier, is network transport layer. And this basically deals with the network infrastructure of the organization. It consists of all the network-related hardware, software, such as switches, hubs, routers, network operating system, firewalls, and so on and so forth, in a enterprise computing environment. The management and admin responsibility lies between the network admins, though sometimes the security admins may share depending on how you have functional units of security, content versus transport security. And some of the common tools will be discussed in slide 19. So let's move on to slide 19, please. This one talks about some of the most common tools. NETSTAT, again, it's a very common tool, and I think everyone should know how to use this because it gives you a snapshot or information of how your network is configured. You have various flags, IN, for instance, which gives you all the interfaces in your environment. RN will give you routing information, and AN will give you all the socket information. And basically all this does is it lets you first find out if a process is running and if it's listening on a particular port and so on and so forth. Host NSLookup and now DIG, which is with bind 9, these commands really help you look a name, a host name to IP. In many cases, when, for instance, you change a host name or you move a machine from one domain to another domain, oftentimes the DNS may not reflect that. And by running these simple commands, you can make sure the forward and reverse name lookup of a particular server is accurate. Oftentimes, the naming component of WebSphere relies on the name lookup, whether JNDI name or Java naming, which will actually look up a host name to actually locate an object. So this is really a first step to make sure that you're able to resolve fine. And also, WebSphere in general, all the ORB communication will ensure that you have forward and reverse name lookup. So oftentimes, it's important to make sure that the server, the target machine you're going to, is resolvable both forward and by reverse lookup. Phrase route gives you the route between two points, so you can tell as to how the packets are going. And this is instrumental sometimes when you may have security policies in place and you know that the packets are going to this particular router, which was recently configured or upgraded, and that's when we have the problem. So this is definitely a very handy tool. Itereal, one of my favorite tools. It's a freeware available on Linux, I think by default now, and the location is there. The cool thing about Itereal is that you're able to filter out information such as by protocol or by IP addresses or by host names or even by messages or by type of packets. And oftentimes I use this for any problems with web services or issue with web container or any communication between two systems. I do an Itereal and I'm able to filter out the information I'm seeking. For instance, if I'm looking for IOP traffic, I can filter out all the IP communication and leave the rest out. And the beauty of this is that if you're having an IP trace utility on any of the Unix platforms, you can use those raw IP trace files to open them without any conversion. Typically, an IP trace is raw, and it's non-human readable format. You can use Ethereal to open them in a human readable format, and there's no formatting that needs to be drawn on the platform, which in AIX typically is an IP report, and so on and so forth. So it's really a handy tool, and people who are not familiar with it, I would recommend that take some time. It's really an easy to follow graphical user tool. And the last one on this list is really EthTool, which will basically display and change Ethernet device settings. Sometimes your device may have problems like full duplex or half duplex, speed changes, and so on and so forth. You can actually display, but oftentimes, depending on the operating system you're using this on, may require you to bring the interface down to make those changes. So that is something which you may have to keep in back of your mind, but this is one comprehensive tool to make those changes on that. So let's go to slide 20, please. Moving on to the next layer, which is layer 2 of web server and plugin layer. And this layer typically involves all the HTTP servers, plugin components, and some additional software that may include third-party plugin or event authentication plugin will also fall in this domain. And the reason why, you know, it's natural to plug them all or group them all together is because a web server or HTTP admin also involves in making sure the plugin files are in place, it's up to date, and they are being loaded. And they also have knowledge of all the debugging, tracing, and logging facilities. So I've grouped them all together. And some of the common tools that I would use as a web admin. Let's move on to slide 21. I've listed them there. Is HTTP Sniff, one of the trace monitors. It's freely available from WebSphere support. And you can either download it from the location given to you, and if not, you can ask your IBM support professional, and we can provide them to you. And all the first, you know, the first tool does is it monitors the HTTP transaction between client and server. A very nifty tool, especially in this day and age of web services. And also, HTTP being, protocol of ubiquity, it's so commonly used that you want to have a tool like this to make sure that your HTTP traffic or transport is fine between the client and server. Also, you have IOP. If you're not using web services, oftentimes, because of the commonly used protocol, HTTP used as a transport mechanism for IOP traffic as well. So this is a great tool to use to really monitor what's going on between client and server. And this will also give you this if you have any intervening firewall or any policies that's filtering out any of the IOP traffic or port associated with it. The next one is HTTP Detect. And I think there's a small fee for this. But regardless of that, I think it's really cool tool that I've used in the past. And basically all this is it lets you parse and decode HTTP protocol. So you can actually break down the headers and see what information is coming. A very instrumental tool if your applications that have heavily dependent on web services, which is using HTTP as transport mechanism. I've listed Ethereal, which we discussed in network tools as well, as one of the tools here because you can use this tool to monitor network and protocol activity, as well as use it to isolate HTTP and all the traffic that's running on top of HTTP. You can, filter all the ICMP traffic, which may not be relevant in this case, and you simply work with traffic dealing with HTTP and above protocols. Another not-so-well-known tool is Analog, and I've used this a couple of times. I think you have many other commercial tools available to monitor and measure the usage on a web server. And depending on, system you're managing, if it's not a production environment and you still want to use a free tool to make sure you're able to measure the usage on a web server, especially in development or staging environment, you can use this tool to see as to what aspect of the web server is being used a whole lot and if you need any of the high availability policies or topologies, to enforce to reduce the usage of a particular web server. So let's move on to the next layer. If you move on to slide 22. And this layer, layer 3, which is application server layer, is probably the most complex of all layers. And the complexity in this particular layer is due to all the interacting components and more as we add on a daily basis. WebSphere 6 has additional components which were not available in version 5. So as we move, you know, and then this goes back to my previous claim of, you know, the complexity of finding the problem in a distributed environment. As we move towards the distributed platform and we have, you know, we move towards componentized framework of computing environment, as we add more layers, especially in this particular layer, your PD process becomes a lot more difficult. So, you know, this layer will primarily consider all the middleware employed, such as your EJBs, your J2C components, which is essentially to connect to all the enterprise information systems or databases and so on and so forth, your databases themselves, your web containers, and now if you're employing SDOs and SCA, then the components that go along with the implementation of these architecture. So this is probably most complex. But we also have to remember that J2EE also defines roles. You have assembler role, you have deployer role, you have the programmers, and you have the administrators. This layer can actually mimic what J2EE roles are defined. And you can actually, you know, we talked about layering by functional units. So this application layer can further be subdivided into, you know, those sub-functions. And they can have their own test patterns. For instance, EJB can have their own test patterns, which we'll talk about, you know, how to test in case of to make sure this EJB is working fine, all the EJBs are okay. And web container can have their patterns to ensure that the web containers are working okay in terms of serving web content. And likewise, you could have tests to ensure JDBC connectivity is okay if you're talking with the, you know, J2C or JCA component, and so on and so forth. So having those tests in place can really ensure you know, that the each component is working fine. Oftentimes, you know, we are trying to troubleshoot the LDAP side of it when you're not able to connect to a database to retrieve the information. So we are actually focusing on LDAP side when the problem really lies in your JDBC connectivity. So again, you know, I think if you simply follow the J2EE roles model, you're able to simply break this down into the roles specified by J2EE, or even have your own roles and have the test patterns individually assigned to those roles. So we'll talk about a few tools. If you move on to next slide. And Christy, we'll talk about this slide again when it comes to database. So let's move on to next slide. Slide 24. And some of the tools that I mentioned here, again, like I mentioned, by far this is not the most exhaustive list, but it'll give you an idea of where to obtain this these tools from. We have seen environments where customers actually like configuration of the development environment and would like to move it to the production environment. So the new host command or tool was developed to basically address that, because by moving the configuration alone will render your app server unusable unless you change all the, you know, host names and all the XML files that were created as a result of configuration. So new host will allow you to simply change the host name in all the files that are touched when you create a configuration. So this is a very nifty tool. So for instance, if things are working fine in your staging environment and you have to move it over to your development environment, you can run the new host tool and change the host name and move the configuration over to the development environment, making sure that your app server and the applications are resolving names fine and everything is okay. The next is JDBC test. And again, all these tools are freely available from WebSphere support. If you don't find them on the website, contact your WebSphere support professionals and I have shipped them to my customers in the past. The JDBC tests are really to eliminate JDBC as a connectivity problem. You can actually run these tests to make sure that you're able to connect and execute a certain SQL statements. So you can eliminate JDBC as a culprit. The next in the line is Last Loader Viewer, and this is really a nifty tool. Oftentimes, depending on how you package your application, you may have jar files that may be packaged wrongly and may give you class not found exceptions. Class Loader Viewer gives you a graphic representation of when the classes are loaded. And looking at this, in version 6, this is included in your admin console. In version 5, you may have to download this and install it, which basically gives you a graphical representation of how classes are loaded and the hierarchy in which they are loaded, making it easier to find any class conflicts that you may have. The last two are MDDJ, which is Memory Diagnostic Tools for Java, and Garbage Collection. Garbage Collection, I'm not sure if any of you have analyzed a text file. It's really a complex file to actually follow through. the garbage collection analyzer will give you an easy visual analysis of a GC behavior as to how much memory is compressed, how much is freed, how much is made available, and so on and so forth. And memory dump diagnostic for Java is really a combination of your heap roots and thread analyzer, which lets you analyze the Java memory dumps, your HProf dumps, and so on and so forth. Very nifty tool. It's a recent addition to our toolbox. I suggest you explore this because it's really, really intuitive to use this particular tool. And you have other tools like Trace Analyzer and Thread Analyzer, which I want to discuss in the interest of time. But if you download this presentation, you'll have all those listed on your presentation, which is really free tools which you can use, and they are really graphical representation of identifying where the leak lies or if you have any deadlocks and so on and so forth. Let's move on to the next slide, which is 3A, and I've listed 3A and 3B as LTPA, which is user registry versus a database, because oftentimes they're hand-to-hand. A database can be used by an application to store data and used by the same LDAP to actually retrieve information. So, again, this particular layering reflects my original diagram that we discussed earlier. And this layer essentially defines the enterprise user authentication infrastructure, and you could actually include LDAP server, trust association interceptors, and so on and so forth. Again, this can vary from organization to organization. Some of the common tools are discussed in slide 26, so let's move on to 26. I'm sorry, I'm hurrying up a little bit in the interest of time. I have a few more slides to go, and then we'll open for Q&A. So some of the tools, again, you can do an LDAP search from command line, but if you have a GUI tool, it's really make a lot more easier because, as you know, LDAP search is a really long string of commands. So, ALS is really a nifty tool to make your LDAP queries, preventing you to memorize those LDAP search commands. And you have kldap and kdiradmin, which really is, which lets you see all the information to make sure that, you have a user who's trying to authenticate and user information is accurate, and it's not the LDAP. And another thing is, if you use these tools, you're able to connect to the LDAP server, and it's not the LDAP server that's the problem. So these tools, and again, this is not the exhaustive list. There's a lot more that I could have included, but in the interest of time, I just want to give the idea that having these tools at hand, you're able to isolate and rule out LDAP as a problem because you're able to query the LDAP, and LDAP is working fine. You can get the statistics using these of LDAP server performance. So let's move on to slide 27, please. And this layer, again, is a database layer, includes any of the commercially available database software like Oracle DB2, Sybase, and so on and so forth. The management of this particular section resides with the database admins, whoever that may be, whether it's DB2, Oracle, or you may have a whole team of data management folks. And some of the commonly available tools, most of them are really shipped with the products, but some of them are listed in slide 28. So let's move on to slide 28, please. And these are common tools. The last four tools I've listed, the DB2 Control Center, Event Analyzer, Health Center, Activity Monitor, they are now, and they have made great stride in these tools. They're commonly included with DB2, so you don't have to buy them. But the good thing about them is with the Control Center and Health Centers, you can actually find if everything is red and if it's a cause of concern versus everything is green. So these tools will tell you that, hey, the transactions are going okay, there's no bottleneck in the database side, and you're able to connect using the JDBC tests to the database servers. The data browser, which is a freeware, enables even non-technical users to access the enterprise data. Again, this can be a double-edged sword because, if you want a non-technical user, you may have to make the access granular. Obviously, you don't want people who are not managing the database server to actually have access and manipulate the data on the enterprise data base. So let's move on to slide 29. And this, I want to spend some time here because oftentimes when the problem manifests itself, they're really problems. And we have to distinguish between things that don't work versus things that work slowly. So oftentimes listing activities outside the domain of normal PD activities. So performance tuning is not quite the same as problem determination. Performance tuning is a lot more involved and a lot more long and drawn-out process because things do work, but they work slowly. So we have to find out where the bottleneck is, and oftentimes that's a longer process because if things were to fail bluntly, it's easier to find out where the failure is. But things are working fine, you need a fine-tooth comb to really find out where things are working slowly. So what I've done is, I think the approach to addressing a performance tuning issue is going with the industry standard benchmarks, like TPCC for transaction processing, SpecJ app server for making sure the app, the app server, WebSphere, WebLogic, or any of the competing products are compliant and have passed the SpecJ app server. And by the way, WebSphere is one of the few products that's actually certified or has listed its results for the SpecJ app server for 2005. So it's important to start with the benchmarks because that way you're able to, remove a big chunk of component from the performance bottleneck. So if an app server conforms to SpecJ app server standards, then chances are then it may be a configuration issue or it may be an application issue that may have to be analyzed. And you have tools like Tivoli Performance Viewer and so on and so forth to really isolate a particular component or a particular method that's probably causing it. But please be cautioned with the differentiating characteristics of the two, PD versus performing tuning. And like the last point states, industry's analyzed benchmarks are a good start to isolate the problem. Let's move on to slide 30, which will summarize what we have learned. And hopefully I was able to drive this message of devising a PD methodology. I cannot stress as to the effort that goes into making PD methodology is quite a bit, but the benefits are immense. So I cannot stress as to how important it is to make this PD methodology a living document and have people be accountable for the layers they own. We talk about merits of PD methodology, which again is role separation, faster time resolution, saving cost savings, and so on and so forth. And above all, it's really adding a structure to the art of PD. Test patterns, we talked about that, using certain tools, and these tools that I talked about, again, by far is not the, complete list, but it'll give you an idea of what to include when the problem happens to actually run the tools and, eliminate yourself out of, or a particular layer as a culprit. And we talked about a few commonly used tools available. Let's move on to slide 31. And again, these are resources and references. I think I've 10:55 on my clock, central standard, so I have 5 more minutes, which may be utilized for Q&A. But resources and references, these are some of the resources and references that I've used to actually get the information in this particular slide. If you move to slide 32, these are some additional WebSphere product resources. I highly encourage you to look for these tools, which are made commonly available to you on the WebSphere support website, and if not, please contact your tech support and we'll be able to provide you with these tools. The good thing about this is that when you call support and you have these tools, it reduces your time to interact with support because you've already done the basics that's required or which support would have instructed you to do anyway. You would have had these tools and run these tests and you would have all the information required for support. This again is a key element in reducing your support time because you've done the homework which support would have asked you to do anyway. But sometimes support is not able to recreate all the problems because of the complexity of the problem. So these are a few resources. I do encourage you to go there, and any feedback is definitely welcome, by our team. Any questions? We can move on to slide 33. This concludes my presentation, and I sincerely hope that I'm able to, convey and communicate the importance of a PD methodology, importance of having tools, so you're able to get this information before even talking to support and, save the time that support would ask you to do anyway. And also, in the process, you may be able to solve and isolate the problem even before invoking support. So this is the important part I want to drive. There are hundreds of tools out there. I've listed just a few of them. So I do want to thank you for your time. And I guess, Christy, now I'll hand it over back to you for any Q&A.
Okay, thank you, Nitin, for a great presentation. So right now, we would like to conduct a short poll. Questions will appear in the e-meeting, and your participation is greatly appreciated. So the first question is, on a scale of 1 to 5, choose the number that best describes how you feel about this statement. The information presented today was useful to me. Please enter 1 if you strongly agree, 2 if you agree, 3 for neutral, 4 if you disagree, and 5 if you strongly disagree. The second question is, on a scale of 1 to 5, choose the number that best describes how you feel about this statement. The material was well organized and clearly presented. Please answer 1 if you strongly agree, 2 if you agree, 3 for neutral, 4 if you disagree, and 5 if you strongly disagree. Question 3. Did this call meet your training expectations? Please answer 1 for yes and 2 for no. Next, please provide us with comments to help improve future webcasts. And I'll just pause for a moment to give everyone a chance to answer. And finally, is there a topic you would like to see scheduled? And I'm just going to pause for another moment. And we welcome any ideas that you may have. Thanks again for your participation. At this point, Richard, we would like to open the lines for questions, and I will turn it over now to Nitin.
And if you'd like to ask a question today, please press star 1 on your touchtone telephone at this time. Once again, star 1 to ask a question. And as a reminder, if you're on a speakerphone, make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, star 1 to ask a question. We'll pause for a moment to give everyone a chance to signal. Our first question comes from Miko Watts.
Hi, Tim. This is Tomiko. I had a question about the new host tool that was a part of the application layer.
Right.
Does that tool also allow you to change the IP address?
No.
So it's only host
name. It's only for host name. And the reason for that is because oftentimes the IP addresses are changed quite frequently depending on how the subnets are designed. But the host names oftentimes can remain the same. All you have to do is do a host name to IP mapping the DNS servers. So it's only for host names, which is primarily used at the time of configuration or, you know, when you configure or install the WebSphere app server.
Okay.
So all the node names, cell names, so on and so forth that are derived from the host name of the system are actually in the XML files.
Okay. I know sometimes that customers, when they do the installation, they put an IP address first as the host name. So
right. In that case, the IP address is used, but a new host will only replace whatever string. It's really a string replacement function.
Okay.
So if you choose to use IP, my response would be yes, you can, but I would not say that's the best practice because that's limiting yourself to many, many other problems that may arise in the future.
And this tool is available from the support side, or you said from support?
You can get this from support, or I think you're internal to IBM. I've spoken to you many times. There's a toolbox on internal websites that actually has new host as a tool there, which you can download it. I'm not sure if this is available in AlphaWorks yet, but at last time I checked, this was still an internal tool to available to IBM support, and oftentimes we've sent this to customers.
Okay, thank you.
Welcome.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, star 1 to ask a question today. Our next question comes from Jim Boucher.
Actually, it's Jim Bush. Thank you. I'm also interested in a new host tool. That's one I haven't heard before. Does it work for WebSphere 5.1 and for 6, or is it only 5?
This tool was designed for version 5. At this point, because the version 6 directory structure of configuration is quite different, I don't think this is going to work completely in version 6, though it may change the old directory structure that you have because you have introduction of profiles in version 6.
Sure.
So it may not fully work, so I wouldn't recommend using this for version 6 till the version 6 version of new host is out. I'm not sure if that's going to be out yet or if there's any such equivalent utility. But at this point, I would not use this new host for version 5. I think it says new host V5.0 for a version 6 scenario.
And how about for 5.1?
That will work as well, because there's not significant directory change within 5.0 and 5.1.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
And once again, everyone, star 1 to ask a question today. And it appears we have no further questions at this time. I'd like to turn it back to Ms. Snyder for closing remarks.
Okay, thank you, Richard. At this time, we will conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation as well. Remember, a replay of this presentation will be available on the IBM WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site within the next day or two. We hope you will join us for future presentations, which will also be announced on this site. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you, Newton, for presenting.
This does conclude today's conference call. Once again, we thank you for your participation, and you may disconnect at this time.